Good morning. On today's programme, jubilation in Syria after Donald Trump lifts sanctions on the country, and the Italian region offering grants to encourage people to move into abandoned properties. But first we go to Romania. The outcome of last weekend's presidential election in Romania caused a major political upset when pro-European centrist Nicu Sirdan defeated the ultra-nationalist right-wing candidate George Simion. Dan, who is the mayor of Bucharest, is a strong supporter of Romania's NATO membership and has pledged to continue providing aid to Ukraine, which he sees as key to Romania's own security against the threat from Russia. Simion had sought to have the vote cancelled on the grounds of foreign interference, but this was rejected by the Constitutional Court. Mary Fitzgerald has this report from Romania.
Last Sunday, Romanians went to the polls in what many, particularly the young generation, described to me as one of the most important elections of their lifetime. On the ballot for the presidency were two men who could not have been more different. The first, Nicu Sirdan, had served as mayor of Bucharest since 2020. A softly spoken mathematician who was educated in Paris, he was largely known for his activism on urban planning in the capital before he became mayor. The second, George Simion, is a brash, hard-right nationalist and Eurosceptic, notorious for his fiery posturing. Much of Simion's populist style comes straight from the Donald Trump playbook, including his Romania First slogans and his tirades against elites. He also claims part of Ukraine and all of Moldova belong to Romania. It was the second time the presidential election had been held. The first, last November, was annulled by Romania's Constitutional Court, amid allegations of campaign financing violations and Russian interference. A far-right conspiracy theorist, an associate of Simion, won that first round but was banned from running again this time. By Sunday night, it was clear that Dan had roundly defeated Simion. I watched his jubilant supporters spill onto the streets of Bucharest, chanting their new president's name. Many of them waved the blue and yellow starred flag of the European Union. Others referenced Moscow's alleged meddling, yelling, "Russia, don't forget, Romania is not yours." 2 days later, Simion sought to have the vote cancelled on the same grounds of foreign interference that led to the original ballot being annulled last year. But Romania's Constitutional Court rejected his request as unfounded. The Simion supporters I spoke to over the past week had one thing in common, a shared suspicion of what they referred to as the system, even if they sometimes struggled to articulate what they meant by that. It's a sentiment that has driven support for far-right and ultra-nationalist parties across Europe in recent years. But Dan's supporters also talked about challenging Romania's old political guard. They praised the new president's anti-corruption stance and told me that reform was on the way. "Now the real work begins," one former prime minister warned at an event I attended. "Reform will take time." It was striking how many of Dan's younger voters prioritised his pro-Europe stance. Romania joined the European Union in 2007, and the experience has dramatically shaped its younger generation. Some told me they were worried that the Eurosceptic Simion would not only drag the country backwards, but also make its future more unpredictable. Some even said they planned to leave if he won. Just before the election, a popular Roma singer released a pro-Dan track spliced with glowing references to Europe. The clip was viewed more than a million times within 24 hours. No one is under any illusions that the next years will be easy. Expectations are high and there will be pressure on President-elect Dan to deliver, even if his promised change will not happen overnight. Some Romanians told me they also fret about their country's political fault lines. Dan's victory may have been solid, but millions of Romanians voted for a very different vision for the future. As one senior official who voted for Dan told me, "We may have won the battle, but the fight continues." From Bucharest, this is Mary Fitzgerald for World Report.
To Syria next. The dramatic lifting of sanctions by US President Donald Trump has been greeted with jubilation by its citizens. It's hoped that this major shift in policy by the US administration will pave the way for the country to recover from years of devastating war. The relief from sanctions will restore the banking system, facilitate private investment, and help to provide electricity, water, and sanitation across the war-torn country. Sally Hayden has this report from Damascus.
Make Syria great again. flashes the billboard in the center of a central Damascus street. It was a few days after US President Donald Trump, on stage at an investment forum in Saudi Arabia, announced that he would drop sanctions on Syria to give the country a chance at greatness. The news was greeted with jubilation in Syria's capital. Fireworks erupted and hundreds of cars beeped their horns as crowds thronged central Omayyad Square. Revolutionary songs blasted from car speakers, interrupted by occasional celebratory gunfire. Children hung out of roof windows, waving the new three-starred Syrian flag. A traffic policeman danced as jubilant young men crowded into the back of a pickup truck passed by, pumping their arms in the air while shouting, "God is great." "Raise your head high, you are a free Syrian," went the lyrics of one oft-repeated song. It was the happiest day for Syrians since the fall of the regime back in December, an attendee pronounced. Syria has long been crippled by sanctions, which isolate its citizens from international trade and global financial systems at a time when the country is struggling to rebuild after more than 13 years of war. Sanctions meant Syrians inside the country can only access online platforms like Microsoft services, Zoom, and Amazon through a VPN. Syrians abroad cannot send money home through banks. Sanctions, along with the former barriers on visiting for foreigners, kept the country's citizens largely isolated. A day after his shock announcement, Trump met in person with Syrian President Ahmed al-Sharaa. Sharaa was previously a leader of the Islamist rebel group Hayat Tahrir al-Sham, who went by the nom de guerre Abu Muhammad al-Jawlani. Trump appeared to be impressed, praising Sharaa as an attractive guy, tough, and a fighter. The US president's words prompted memes and GIFs from Syrians across social media, who were, as usual, using humor to process a development that would have been unimaginable until it actually happened. Nearly 6 months after Bashar al-Assad was exiled to Russia, change continues across a country where one family previously held power for more than half a century. In the National Museum in Damascus, an exhibition honoring prison detainees and people disappeared under the regime opened this month. It has sections commemorating chemical weapons attacks and those whose deaths following torture were revealed by the military photographer turned defector Caesar. 23-year-old Yara Ghanem took the chance to visit the museum for the first time in her life. She said the exhibition made her feel hope for the future but also pain, which it was impossible to process before because of the level of terror. She said she wants the Syrian people to exist as one now, but added that they should definitely keep criticizing the government, not out of hate, but so we can build the country that we've been dreaming of. HTS, which led the rebel victory to oust Bashar al-Assad last December, was once affiliated with al-Qaeda. Concerns about what the current government may have in store for the future have continued, along with fears of renewed sectarian violence following a spate of revenge killings and massacres in March carried out predominantly against Alawites, the sect which Assad was a part of. One discussion has been about whether the new leadership will forbid alcohol, though people continue to drink in Damascus bars. One, Abu George, is regularly packed, people cramming together at tables between walls covered in graffiti, including scrolls from Irish people who visited in the past. There are gigs and club nights too. Syrian DJ Noura Dahar, who goes by the name DJ Nouria, came to Syria from Berlin for the first time in 14 years to play a sold-out gig in a club in Damascus's Christian area, Baptouma. Despite two publicized attacks inside bars the previous week, the 32-year-old Syrian said she felt safe. "The unsafe situations people may hear about are not due to the current ruling government," she said. "Like in many countries, there are conservative groups that sometimes act out, and that's what's happening in Syria. Seeing people dancing freely with happiness on their faces was all I could ask for." She said her hopes for Syria are peace, unity, and healing now. "I want to see a country where people of all religions and backgrounds live together in harmony and mutual respect." This hope is echoed by many. For World Report, this is Sally Hayden in Damascus.
Finally, we go to Italy. The northern region of Trentino is rolling out an innovative new scheme to counteract depopulation in several areas. The regional government is offering grants of up to 100,000 euros to those who are willing to relocate and restore abandoned properties. Many houses in the area are converted into short-term rentals for tourists. So will this initiative succeed in bringing back long-term residents? Josef Kutia reports.
Trentino, the northern Italian region renowned for its natural beauty, is a haven for nature lovers. Featuring the iconic Dolomites mountain range, rolling vineyards, and the shores of Italy's largest lake, Lake Garda, the region is a must-visit destination. Trentino is, however, facing an uphill struggle. A number of its villages are experiencing a gradual but steady fall in the number of people living there. This is not unique to Trentino, but is in fact a worry across Italy, particularly in the south of the country. In several Italian towns, especially in Sicily, councils have offered for sale houses for just 1 euro in a campaign to attract families and boost the population. The province of Trentino is taking up a similar approach, but with a twist. The province's statistical office has identified 33 areas that have experienced a downturn in their inhabitants over the past decade. In order to prevent these villages from becoming deserted, the province intends to contribute 20,000 euros towards the purchase of properties and a further 80,000 euros for the renovation. According to Nicolas Teofilos of Immobiliare.it real estate agents, places such as Val di Non, famed for its picturesque mountain gorges and apple orchards, have gone through a slump over 11%. This means that if buyers are interested in getting hold of an abandoned house in one of these spots, the province could pay out a total of 100,000 euros. You might ask, what does the fine print say? One of the main conditions notes that one must either reside in the property for 10 years or otherwise rent it out for the same duration. Otherwise, one may be required to repay the amount of money the province paid out. The condition rules out any intention to rent out the newly acquired property for short-term stays. Trentino is a magnet for tourists, in summer for hiking and in winter for skiing. Buyers are limited to a total of 3 units to prevent any one buyer from taking over an entire village. Individuals who cough up renovation expenses of 200,000 euros may be eligible for up to 80,000 euros through this program. Additionally, applicants must be under 45 years of age and not currently living in the area. The region is focused on attracting families and singles to revitalize specific localities. The provincial director of Trentino, Eliano Olivo, told the Italian newspaper Corriere della Sera that this initiative is intended to promote social cohesion. Even the addition of just 5 new family groups could have a significant impact on a town's life, she said. Not everything is set in stone, however. In an official statement, Maurizio Fogatti, the provincial executive of Trentino, said that this is an experiment that has never been implemented before and may be subject to subsequent adjustments. What has led these places to look like nearly ghost towns? One of the reasons is that many properties have been converted into short-term rentals. Tourists live in there for only a few days, resulting in empty villages. This trend has crippled certain tourist hotspots across Europe due to the rise of mass tourism. There are, however, other factors contributing to the drop in dwellers. A slide in the birth rate and the challenging accessibility of certain towns due to winding mountain roads are major concerns. The lack of certain amenities further exacerbates the problem. Italy has gone through a telling decline in its fertility rate. According to Italy's National Institute of Statistics, the country's residents are expected to slip to 54.8 million by 2050, which means a decline of 4 million people. This is Josef Kutaja for World Report in Italy.
Well, that's it from World Report for today. The programme was edited by Margaret Curley. If you want to listen back, you can go to rte.ie/worldreport or on all podcast platforms. We're back again at the same time next week. Until then, from myself, Justin McCarthy, and all the team, thanks for listening and take care.